Session number 1107, rule 3.
Mr. J.F. Bell, Reel 3. You're a battalion cook, Mr. Bell. Can you explain to me how a cookhouse was organised, who was in charge and so on?
Well, you had a messing officer, which was normally a lieutenant. You had a cook sergeant and a cook corporal, and then the cooks, which normally was a two-pair company. Yeah? Or the equivalent of the rank. And you may have one or two learners. You know, like starting to learn. And you got your daily menu or whatever it was, and you just produced it and dished it out.
Who was it that drew up the menu?
It would be the messing officer and the crew sergeant. Eh? I mean, we had nothing to do with the actual deciding on what would get and what they wouldn't get. See? So I don't know, as far as we know, he had a messing officer. I forget his name now, but he was a lieutenant. The coach sergeant was Sergeant Kemp, and I forget the name of the lance corporal, but anyway, and you normally worked out two cooks per company, which was, what, 10? 3 or 4 companies in the HQ.
Was there a kind of shift system working?
No, everybody turned in at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, whatever time, and you had two orderly cooks which did the breakfast the next morning. You see, there were no suppers. Eh? All you got was breakfast, dinner, and tea. There was no such thing as suppers in them days, you see. You went to the naffy for them if you wanted anything more. So...
Who did the washing up? Were the cooks?
No, we had... in the Sudan, it was all steam boilers. I'm saying steam boilers in the sense that they were like... a big cauldron with steam jackets, eh? And your potatoes were done in a steam jacket doings. And you had two natives who kept the fires going to produce the steam. And you also had two or three natives who did the washing up and that, you see. But they didn't do any cooking. Not like India, where in India each company had the two cooks and a learner cook, you see.
Was it one of the messing officers' jobs to also order in the supplies from wherever they came from?
Yeah, but you got your basic ration. I forget the word, a pound of bread, a pound of meat, and this, that, and the other. And then you had a sum, which you normally, in England, you spent in the naffy, such as bacon and, you know, or anything like that. But you had your basic ration, so you had bread, meat, tea, sugar, all the rest of it.
And as far as you know, where did that come from? Was it private contractors for some of it or all of it?
I couldn't tell you. We never used to see them, to tell you the truth. You see, as I told you, I think last time, the meat. You used to get meat every day, the pound of meat, bar on Thursday. Eh? And on Thursday, they used to open tins of McConaughey, which I'm sure was left over from the First World War.
Yes, you told me that last time.
And...
Sorry.
See the messing officer and the side, they would do all that. You get all the, and you had like a storeman who had all the stuff in, you know, tin stuff and all the rest of it. Because as I told you on there before, that there was no refrigeration. Eh? They would have maybe a cool place, a cellar or somewhere where they kept stuff, I don't know. But we used to go in, like, tea, sugar, milk and all that. You go to the stores and draw, like a store attached to the cookhouse, and just draw it out. Eh?
What was hygiene like in the cookhouse, was it?
They used to be red hot on it. You know, they'd get the orderly officer and all these people coming around. Oh, yes, one thing they were very, very strict on.
And was it part of, again, of the cook's task to clean all everything so carefully?
So, as I said, we had two or three natives, you know, but you had to make sure that was done. If you were orderly cook, you see, you had to make sure it was done. Actually speaking there, as orderly cooks, we slept in the cookhouse. Eh? because you had to start about 5 o'clock in the morning to start preparing the breakfast, which was normally porridge and, you know, whatever it was, bacon and stuff like that.
Have you any other memories of the Sudan?
Well, the football pitch, I don't know whether that's interesting to them or not. The football pitches were about nearly a foot below the level of the camp or the barracks. And they used to be flooded if there were a match on the... Well, you didn't start playing football or rugby until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You used to flood them about 9 inches of water. It was dry by the time you went on and played. You know, the heat had evaporated it. And
these were grass pictures?
Yeah, grass. About the only place around where there was grass. The other one, the sandstorm, I don't know whether anybody's ever mentioned it. Oh, dear me, what a sandstorm one day. Oh, it was a real sandstorm. You couldn't see anything for sand. We shut all the windows in the barrack room, but that didn't keep them out.
Did it affect the kitchens as well?
No, well, it cleaned up afterwards, you see. It lasted about, 3 or 4 hours, you know. But it was a real sandstorm. Everything was black. You know, just like the night had come on.
And what were the difficulties of living in a sandstorm or living through a sandstorm?
Well, all you could do was just bottle down somewhere and cover yourself up and hope for the best. I mean, there was nothing you could do. You know what I mean? And no air fans and nothing like that to try and pull it out of the hotel, in the barracks, you know. And we just, you know, it lasted about 4 hours, I think, you know, and then it sort of blew over and that was it. And the barracks then was about 2 inches of sand all over the place. Of course, I had to start cleaning it up then. And the other thing, we fired our annual course there, you know, the usual thing, you had to go on the range. Rivali was at 5 o'clock, and by the time you got on the range, it was just daylight, you know. And by the time we came to about 8 o'clock, 8:30, you had to pack up because all the targets were dancing with the heat shimmering. You know, maybe you've seen it on the road. Well, you can imagine what it's like there, twice as hot, you know, they're going like that. And you went back at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and got down and did a bit more. And it used to take you about a week to fire your course, which normally you could do in 2 or 3 days. You had to pack in. And, because there was no parades outside, between after what? 9:30 in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The temperature used to get up to about 140. So if they did anything during the day, they did it in the barrack room, like, you know, Lewis Gunn or whatever it was. Then you had to do ones. And the other one I remember, when we went to Gabit, this change of air place, off the star, little hill station thing, there were some regiment and cab badges there, which weren't in a very good condition. And the only one we could more or less recognise was the Staffordshire Regiment.
Yes, badges incised into the ground.
On the side of the hill, you know, like you would see these white horse things, you know. And we often wondered who did it and, you know, when they were there and all the rest of it, but we didn't know, you know. The only other thing, you talked about Khartoum, just in the barracks over where there was a stone hut. I don't know whether it was or not. That was supposed to be the magazine for Gordon's doings in Khartoum. Whether it was or not, we don't. That's what they told us anyway. That was the original magazine of, the relief of Khartoum and all this sort of thing.
Did you
have
any problems with the Sudanese? You did tell me about the Sudanese, but did you have any problems similar to what was either the Ahada was threatened in India, the riots, that kind of thing?
No. No, I found them, how can I put it, they were a different class of people to the Indian, that you couldn't push them around, you know what I mean, and you realise yourself you can't do it, you know what I mean, you wear people up and you say, we didn't have a great, we had one or two worked in the barracks, you know, like sweeping roads and things like that, but we didn't have them in like charwallers and people like that, you see.
What about postage, post and letters and parcels? Were they coming from home?
Ah, well, there you are now. Ah, you've heard of the, what do you call it now? Oh, what do you call them flying boat? B-O-E-C or something.
Sunderland's,
were they? Sunderland. You used to watch them come down and land on the Nile there, on the way to South Africa. You used to go down to South Africa. And the majority of our mail came in like that.
Did it come quite often?
Oh, yes, it was a regular service to South Africa, you see, and back, of course, we, I think twice a week, I don't know. Well, I don't know, with the Sunderland Flying Boat or before Sunderland Flying Boat, or the Sunderland Flying Boat might have came, you know, improvement on these things, you know. But that's how we used to get the mail.
When did you leave the Sudan?
October... tell you, 29th of October 1937. Now then, the orders came out. Any man with more than 2 years' service to do was cross-posted to the 1st Battalion. The 1st Battalion was going abroad to China. Now, if you notice the date, my 2 year was the 22nd of November, the 11th. So that's just under a month. I still went to China. And one or two came home, footballers and what have you, you know, them blue-eyed boys, like. But majority of it is, you know, if you had more than 2 years' service to do, you posted to the 1st Battalion.
And you were just 1 month over that?
1 month over it, and just I went. So...
What are your memories of China?
Now then. Remember, we went, we left the 2nd Battalion, the 2nd Battalion came home. We went, we joined the 1st Battalion at, on the, it's Dilwala, they called the troop ship. And the Dunes came round, wanted some PAC orderlies. I don't know if you've ever heard of that or not. So I thought, myself, well, I'll have a change from the cookhouse. I'll pull in for one of these.
What's a PAC?
Prophylactic Ablution Centre. I'll come on to it, you know, later on, you see. And I thought, book it, I'll have a change. So anyway, I put in for it and I got the job. And we did a little bit of training on the troop ship. We called in Singapore, but nobody, the only people that went to show people that were going there to the stations. Then we went to Hong Kong. We stopped there, I think, overnight. We left Hong Kong the next day in the tail end of a typhoon. And you can imagine what, what it was like. And we looked at what the hell is that? There was two of our destroyers, S-governors, and two Japs keeping tail on us all the way, two Jap destroyers, right away till we got to Shanghai. And me and the three others, we were advance party. So instead of getting off with the lad, we got off onto a tug, went to shore, and we went to UUN Road Schools. We were billeted there. And Shanghai, to me, it was an international concession. And that time, of course, the Japs had the place surrounded. And we had guards on each main road leading into the international concession. There was us, Aitais, and Yanks. Well, I think the Yanks were more on the Yankee ambassador or somebody like that, you see. And the place I never went much on. We stopped in these schools. While we were there, the Yanks had the Japs had the victory parade through the town. Of course, we were all confined into barracks. And then we moved to Jessfield Park. A and B Company went to Jessfield Park, and C and D and HQ went to Great Western Road. So actually, you see, you had like doings. And apart from these. Posts that went out every night. You did 24 hours on, like, you know, 1 day on and 2 days off. Sort of regular thing, you know, and you were on one side of the road and the Japs were on the other side. But, of course, our orders were not to cause any trouble. So, but to get back to this PAC orderly business. Now, when we went there... This PAC orderly was, PAC thing was prevention of venereal disease. And you had a big doings in the door, they put a half a gallon cannon of hot Cundy's crystals in and had to take it in, fill the bladder and blow it out. And every time they did that, we'd give them a little slip. Now, if they hadn't won them slips and they got VD, they got 28 days in the clink. No argument about it.
How did they take this stuff in and blow it out? They drank it in?
No, through the pipe. Through
it was pumped in?
No, it was up a height.
Oh, I see.
So the natural doing the water, they had to take it in, you know, fill your balls out, and then pee it out until you'd used it all. Eh? And then I give them a little chit, something like that, eh? Say they'd been in and had it. Now, if they hadn't one of them and they had VD, they got 28 days clink. That's without all the other business of your pay and all the rest of it. See, at that time, venereal disease was one of the biggest crime in the British Army. And we used to fiddle it. The brother comes here, I think I've got it all right. Here. You know, if that hadn't been in, say, right, oh, hang on 2 days, and the MO knew. Eh? Actually, the MO told us once. See, rather than give the bloke 28 days in the glass house, eh? And I remember, I forget his name now. He came up, he could hardly walk. He was, and he had the lot. I said to the sergeant, we had a sergeant there called Armstrong. I said, hey, have a look at this. He said, well, what the hell are we going to do? I said, have you got a chit? He said, no. So when he said, well, hang on, the MO's in there. I'll have a word with the MO. Right, he said, give me a chit, tell him to come back in 2 days' time and we'll fix it for him. See, if it didn't, it meant he went in hospital, he got cured. When he come out, he went straight in the, not in our jail, in the glass house. Huh? So, you know, I mean, they hammered you for that.
So, if we come back to it, they had this washout.
Yeah.
And then they went to the woman. Was this before they went out?
No, this is after the after. You see, when they've been down the town, eh? Now, I'll come on to that sort of thing later. But when they went out, you know, went out to the barracks. Now, before you could go out the barracks, you had to have a French letter, with a condom, as they call it now, and an ET packet. I don't know whether you've had an ET packet.
What was that?
It was a little packet, about that big. It had a little tube of salve in and a little bit of cotton wool with soft soap in. So when you had a woman, if you wanted a woman, and you were saying you just peed on it a bit to soften the soap, wash it, and put this tube of stuff in. But you couldn't go out them barracks. You had to show them before they would let you out the barracks. Eh?
And then afterwards they came back for this?
Yeah, afterwards they come back. Well, that's all. Get a chit just in case, just in case, you see. But you had to have these things when you went out. Eh? French letter and this ET packet, we used to call it. A little tube of cream and a little bit of cotton wool soaked with soft soap, see. So you have to wash it and do it. So you put the tube in.
Whereabouts in Shanghai do they go for their ladies?
Well, actually, there was a recognised brothel area down there. I'm not talking about Blood Alley. You've heard of Blood Alley, have you? Huh? You haven't heard of Blood Alley? Oh, dear me. Well, Blood Alley was in the French concession. It was a street, a fairly wide street, but every place was like a drink, come cabaret, come dance hall. The whole lot. And, of course, he used to get all bloody sorts down there. French, Italians, Yanks, us, you know. And I'll tell you a funny little story about it. I'd gone out and I fancied this bit of stuff. I thought, oh, chapman. Well, it was the Yankee idea, see. As you went in the little dance hall, all the lasses used to sit round, all the women. And when you went in, you went to the Memsab and you got a couple of dollars worth of tickets or whatever you went, eh? So then, you tore a ticket off and you give it to the lass. Once she took that ticket, she had to get up and dance, whether you could dance or not. Well, I fancied this bit of stuff. I thought, well, White Russian. I had a couple of dances with her. And the bloody eye tag kept sticking his nose in. And I'd had a few jars, so I thought myself, no, right. I'll fix him. So I watched him. I quickly went in the toilet. Right, I'm in there. Anyway, one of our blokes come out, a Clance Corporal. I'm forgetting his name now. He said, you know, need to go in. I said, what for? He said, I've been watching it. When I went in, the eye tie was laid flat on the mat. Right, get out. So we all souped off and went. We just go down the bottom, the stairs. And, of course, the red caps came and the guys knew what. Laid flat down.
Was there much fighting between the various troops?
The only people we couldn't get on with were the eye ties. I don't know why, but we couldn't get on with them. Even in them days, you know. And what was the other one? You're talking about little incidents. Oh, we've gone up to what we call the little club. It was upstairs, down the main street there. Cabaret thing, you know, and dancing. Went up there, there was two of us. I forget who it was now. A bloody Jap pulled his revolver out and started firing in the bloody air. And a big Yankee Marine went over and propped him on straight down. Oh, well, get out. Get out before anything does that. You know, if the Japs had started, well, that was it. We couldn't have done nought. I mean, when you look back, I mean, we were there. And, you know, the bloody old Japanese army was on the outskirts. Well, anyway, we'll get back, get further on. Peace in our time. Yeah. We were there then. So I said, oh, I'm going to get down there and get the old woman a tea set. So I went in this bar I used to use, it was a white Russian there, you know, there were a lot of white Russians. Said, here, I want a tea set for the old lady. She said, oh, Said, tell you what, come down tomorrow afternoon, I'll take you around, we'll have a look. See, I thought to myself, well, she know what she's, you know, living there. About 10 o'clock, the bloody police came in. Back to barracks for lot of you. So we all go back to barracks. Right, pack your gear, ready for moving in the morning. So we packed our gear and the chinks were lapping it up, you know, because we were, our socks and things like that, chucking them away and all that. Well, they got a field day, them. And what the hell's going on? Then they come out like peace in our time. But when we woke up the next morning, we were the only bloody British troops left there. They took the rest out on bloody destroyers.
So this would be what, 19...
37.
37.
No, 38. Yeah, 38. 38. See, when he come back with his bit of paper.
And how long were you there after this? Did you go? Did you move straight out after that?
No. We were there about another... that was September, wasn't it? Well, I think about October again. We went up to Peking. So, anyway, we leave Shanghai, nothing else there, really.
You didn't have any situations where there could have been a confrontation with Japanese troops?
Oh, yes. But, then, you know, sort of, you know, just managed to cool it down, you know. My mate could tell you, lived at West Armless, Carroll. He was in the regimental police at Chesterfield Park. They got a phone call from a bit further down the road was a convent school. A Jap soldier in there, you know, chugging his weight about. So anyway, I sent two of our blokes down, dragged him out, showed him in our guard room, and phoned for the Japs. And the Japs came with a little bloody pickup or something. And this Jap officer, he dragged him out and he belted him all over the place. He, dear me, he gave him a bloody good hiding and shot him in the back of his PU, whatever it was, and took him away then. Of course, that was one to us. See, he'd load the... You know, lowered the Japs down in our eyes, eh? But not really, you know. And then, say, then we went to, we left there, and I forget who took over. It was a Scotch mob, I think. They were relieved us. Anyway, we went up to Peking. We did. Well, actually, the battalion went to Tsin.
About what time was this? Have you any idea?
No, it was in, what, October 38. And A and B company, no, A company and half a B, and two platoons of B company, we went straight to Peking, where the battalion HQ and the others were all in Tsin. So, anyway, we get to Peking, I forget who we relieved. Now somebody up there. But actually speaking, we were what they call legation guard. We're actually in the legation compound. And tell the story. But anyway, when we got there, if you want the history, every barrack room had a chinky servant. And what have you. Of course, I was CEO, what was it? Captain Simpson. Not having them out. Not having my troops, you know. I think there was one or two in each barrack room. Right? Out. The number one boy said, "You can't do that to me," he said. "I'm going to see the ambassador." So what the hell is the matter like? He said, "Well," he said, "we have the," he said, "my father's father, grandfather, was the man that got them relieved in the siege of Peking, in the Boxer Rebellion." He said, "Now you have the right to everything in this barracks." He went and he saw the British ambassador and come back, right, reinstated them. It was unusual for us to have somebody getting up on the morning. By the time he went down on the shave, come back, your bed made up and your beautiful breath. We only paid, I think, what? The other thing, you know, you hear about inflation here. Now, when we went to Shanghai, we got $15 a week. When we left, we were getting $300 a week. You know, this inflation business, because we were getting paid sterling. Eh? Well, the chinks were, you know, so as their money went down, ours went up and up and up, so. But anyway, we'll get back to Peking. So it looks a dismal place, you know, really. Proper old-fashioned barrack thing with catwalks right way around the walls, pretty big high walls. And we looked, said, but anyway, I'm still PAC orderly. And we used to have a little place down the road, a couple of miles, which was like a little club, only for British soldiers, see? They could go in there, have a drink, have a meal, and a rub out if they wanted one. So I was there, like, as the PAC orderly plus, you know, like gaffer. Me and a lad called Roe from Seam Harbour. But anyway, I'll get back to where they looked around and said, then we looked around and said, "What the hell is them? 2 18-pounder guns." I said, "Who the hell's going to fire them?" There was a sergeant out the artillery there, and then we had to supply 2 gun screws for them. So what the hell are we going to do with them? 18-pounder, you know, First World War noon. So anyway, he got these gun screws, you know, and practiced them. And then, you know, the photograph you had, the fair hats and that. These shields were the fair hats. And an extra top coat. Anyway, we didn't realise it, but to give you some idea of the cold, there was 2 concrete tennis courts, you know, hard tennis courts. So they flooded them like today, and they flooded them the next day, and they flooded them on the third day. On the fourth day, it was a skating rink.
This would be their winter, was it?
Oh, yes, yeah. When it snowed then, it snowed just after we got there, and it never thawed. And that's why you got these fair... I asked the MO, "What the hell's the idea of the fair hats?" Well, if you don't have them on, you get severe headaches. A cold, you know, would be doings. And that's why we had the... They were like corduroy with a bit of fur inside and the fur flaps, you see. And he said, "If you don't wear them, you'll go down with severe headaches." Yeah? So there you were, then what was the next thing that happened? Oh, we got inspected by a Japanese general in the barracks. He must have been taken over, commanded the troops around, you know, and he was in the barracks, and paraded us, and, you know, the usual doings. And you could hear all the lads muttering, yellow buff, this is good bad. And... we never got on with the eye test. No, Peking, you were on about rations, cook. I wasn't, he didn't need cooks. We had Chinese cooks. So I looked at him, what the hell's going on there? 2 cows come in the dunes and they took them over in the far corner. There was a brick building there. They used to bring the beef in and the hoof. But we weren't allowed to kill them. We had a butcher, I was supposed to be a butcher. Look, we couldn't find out what's going on. I went over and here's these two beasts, some up with the back legs, and the lama, the priest, you know, giving them big legs, you know, insects all over the place, and chanting, slit their throats, and that was it. But we weren't allowed to kill them. And all the time we were there, when they went to meet, they used to bring antins in, bring them in live into the barracks, and these blokes, priests used to kill them.
What was the food like overall at the time you were in China?
Oh, well, I would say it was the best grub we ever had.
Was it a lot of it Chinese-type food?
No, no. You see, same as Indian. Now, we never used curry in India. I wonder if anybody's ever told you. We never cooked any grub with curry. What they used to do, we had one of your cooks was called the curry boy. Eh? And he used to provide his own curry. He used to get 15 rupees a month, I think it was. And what he used to do is make two doons of gravy. One with ordinary gravy and one with the curry in. Eh? And I've seen blokes come out the wet canteen, have a couple of slices of bread and a plate of curry. Not having any dinner. Oh, we never let anything like that.